Welcome back to the Thermodiet Podcast. I'm your host, Jayden Miller, and I'm here with my co-host, Mr. Tyler Woodward.
How are we doing today, Jayden?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good. So today we're going to be talking about how to design your own workout split.
Yes, and this episode is brought to you by Umzu Fit, our premier educational platform. Tell them a little bit about the app.
Yeah, so Umzu Fit is a platform made for you. It's got programs ranging from bodyweight mastery, fat loss, aesthetics, to elite hypertrophy, and then every supplement guide, every health guide you need is pretty much all there. So it's a very inclusive platform with a lot of information on it. It's a great community on it. It's growing very fast. We've doubled the amount of people on there in the last couple of weeks. And by the time this podcast launches, we'll have an app out there. So it'll be really nice on your phone. You can just look at the programs, look at all the workouts, have it all right there, without needing to go on the computer or the website.
Yep, and it's also free with any subscription of Umzu products. So you get access to all of our educational resources. The Thermo Diet book is in there. The Thermo Chef cookbook is in there. So if you're interested, make sure to check it out.
And you get to hit up coaches like me, Jayden, Rob, and Zach, and we'll answer your questions for you if you have any.
Yep. So today, what are we talking about?
Today, we're going to talk about how to design your own workout program. And so the first step in designing your own workout program is obviously choosing what your goals are. So for me, and I think generally most people want to build muscle and lose fat. Within that, first step is deciding whether you want to prioritize building muscle or losing fat. Obviously, that's the difference between those two is pretty much going to be primarily from nutrition. So you can lift, have the exact same workout routine, theoretically, and if you're in a calorie deficit, consuming fewer calories than you burn, you're going to lose weight. If you're in a calorie surplus, you're going to put on muscle mass. Basically, you need that extra calories to add on tissue. And from there, I mean, you can do some recomposition. We do have an Umzu Fit recomposition program out there, but it's just not going to be, it's going to be less efficient. Mm-hmm. If you want to lose fat at a rapid rate or gain muscle at a relatively fast rate, you want to be in surplus or deficit respectively.
Mm-hmm. So what does that look like from, you say that the workout can be the same, in terms of like volume and the amount that you're actually doing during the workouts, does that change at all for the stress and stuff like mm-hmm. that?
Because you have less calories, your ability to recover in a calorie deficit is going to be lower. But at the same time, it's really important to maintain as much mass as possible. So I think a lot of the new research showing that you pretty much don't want to decrease volume significantly from going to calorie surplus to calorie deficit. I would say this probably you want to have a maintenance dose of volume where you're not really stressing your body more than it needs to be, where you would want in a surplus where you have the extra energy to recover from it. But you do not want to go too low in volume to the point where you're not maintaining muscle mass. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I don't have an exact equation for that. What's his name that you like? Was it
Mike Isertel,
he has a great book on this that I'm looking forward to reading. He talks about max recoverable volume, maintenance volume, and then he's very into like periodizing certain muscle groups. So you, in this program, you go for a lot of quads and you maintain on chest or something like that, and you just phase it in like that.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like the minimum effective dose.
Exactly, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so realistically, like from a maintenance perspective, you can probably, if you go hard enough and one set take close enough to failure, you can probably maintain muscle mass or at least a significant amount of muscle mass with one set once a week. So most people are not going to go to the degree of failure that you need to do that. And also to the same point, going to that degree of failure is probably going to be more fatiguing than doing a couple sets. Mm-hmm. So the way I like to look at it and split it up is like, first, I'm just going to set out what muscle groups I want to hit. Mm-hmm. So generally for me, it's going to be biceps, triceps, obviously the lats, chest, all the main ones. And I lay those out. And then I list them in order of priority. Mm-hmm. So for me, let's say my last split, I'm really been prioritizing shoulders and back and a little bit chest. Those are my top three. So I like to choose how many days a week I'm going to lift. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's anything, you can do 7 days a week if you really want to. I think it's more excessive. 6 days I think is even excessive. I think the sweet spot is 5 to 3. And 2, I think it's a little bit on the lower side, but you can definitely get away with it if you program it right. Mm-hmm. And then I'm going to lay those muscle groups out by the day. And so like the chest, shoulders, and back, which I'm really going for right now, I'm probably going to put those in twice. And then I'm going to make sure I fill in all the blanks, get my forearms. Jayden likes programming calves every day.
That's a lie.
I program calves a lot. I'll probably do calves twice a week too. And I'll do program those in, and I get it basically like a puzzle, laying out a calendar. That's pretty much what World of Workout Split is, really just how you're organizing the calendar. And then you can prioritize things within the session. So let's say I'm hitting chest, back, and quads one day. I think there's two ways to look at this. You can, you know, you can start with what you want to prioritize first, so it's fresh. But I also think you can leave it for last, because then you can give it all you have at the very end. Mm-hmm. I think it's a little bit of what works best for you. Do you have any preference on it?
I usually like to do it first, just because I like to get the hardest thing out of the way and then kind of like coast through the rest of the workout. That's just because I come in the gym the freshest, and I like to kind of get the it's kind of like doing the hardest thing first and then working backwards in difficulty.
I agree. But so for me, a lot of times I'll do what's like, let's say what I want to do the least first. Cause that's like kind of what it's not physically the hardest, but it's like, so I would skip calves for a while because I had them at the end of my workout and I would just be tired. I'm like, dude, I'm not doing calves. I'm going home. Same thing with forearms. But if I put forearms in the first thing in my workout, I'm not going to skip them. And it's a nice warm up because your body will get a little blood flow going. So I've been doing that a lot. And then maybe I'll go into, because those are not very taxing, calves, forearms, those small muscle groups, even arms. So then I will go into my bigger lifts. And then sometimes, like I've been doing a cast set, which is like really fatiguing. I posted a video on it this week. Those I'm definitely leaving for towards the end, because the goal is to be have nothing left in the tank after that.
Right. Whenever you're doing that, though, these accessory movements that you're doing at the beginning of the workout aren't going to fatigue the muscle groups that you're going to be using for your main lifts, right?
Yeah, that's a great point. So you don't want to, the best thing you can do in terms of programming yourself is eliminating redundancy. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be in things like, you probably do not want to hammer your calves before going to a squat, because your calves need to stabilize the knee during the squat. It's not like it's going to be the end of the world if you do, but you might not be able to squat. It might be a little bit less safe. It might be a little bit more fatiguing. And there's certain overlap. So like ideally, and you might not want to do lats and biceps, depending on the movements particularly too, on the same day, because a lot of rows will hit biceps a little bit as well. Mm-hmm. Same thing with chest and delts. You can get away with it, especially if you program it right and you overload different portions of the muscle group and the range of motion. But it's like, if me going from a chest press to a shoulder press, I'm going to be pretty fatigued. It's going to have a lot of overlap there. I'm probably not going to be able to use the same weight on that second exercise as I would have been if I was able to do it fresh. Mm-hmm. So that's why I'm a huge fan of the half body, the full body splits, because it's like I can do one quad exercise, I can do one shoulder exercise, one bicep exercise, calves, and I don't know, forearms or something, mm-hmm. or triceps, whatever. And there's not going to be a huge amount of overlap, mm-hmm. which is really cool. So
whenever you're like laying this out for like a 4-day program, for instance, are you doing like an extremely taxing workout one day and then kind of a lighter workout the next day and then repeating that in the second half of the week?
I try to keep it pretty even throughout. Because I mean, it's not like you want each muscle group to basically be stimulated the same amount. Ideally, obviously you might be prioritizing a couple, so you want those stimulated more, which is why I would say program those in more frequently if you can. But it's like that degree of failure is, so I mean, basically, you know, when you're taking a muscle group, you have producing mechanical tension. So you go and scratch your head with your bicep, small amount of force being produced. But if you take a bicep curl, first rep, not a lot of force, second rep, a little bit more. At the end, you're producing close to the maximum amount of force in that muscle. That's called Henneman size principle. So you're recruiting what's called like the last standing motor units, the high threshold motor units that are only activated when they're close to failure. And that's going to be what primarily drives A, muscle growth, and B, maintenance. Mm. It's just recruiting the muscle fibers that are only recruited when you're close to failure.
Mm-hmm. Is that also why you tend to program isometric movements with body weight movements or things like that to kind of fatigue the muscle before you go into the set?
Yeah, because it's very important. So there's the isometrics and the isometronics are pretty interesting. There's a lot of research on them for rehab as well. So the isometronics, so isometrics is when you just hold the load, right? Isometronics is when you're pushing against a movable force. So let's say I take a deadlift, a rack pull basically, but you pull the opposite way, right? So you pull from the ground and you pull into a bar and you can't move that bar, obviously. The bar is stuck there. Then that's isometronic because you're pushing against the movable force. No matter how hard you push, you will never be able to break that bar. You can push to a wall. You can do a ton of things. And so those are really good at stimulating muscle recruitment. So you can get similarly to taking that to with a heavy weight to failure, taking that bicep curl, a chest press to failure, but you don't need the dumbbells. You don't need the cable, which is interesting because it opens up a lot of opportunities for lifting at home with a lot less equipment. But it is really important. Those things by themselves for muscle growth are not ideal. So you can do those isometrics and let's say you're doing a towel curl for biceps and you're just pulling on it. You wait 10, 15 seconds as hard as you can. And then you take whatever you got, 5-pound dumbbell, a resistance band, and then you take the muscle through its full range of motion after. And because you've already, pre-fatigued or recruited those muscle fibers, that you're going to get a lot more hypertrophy than just doing the isometronic by itself or using the less ideal resistance like the band or the dumbbell. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's really going to depend on what you have available to. If you are at home, obviously, just you got to do what you got. Maybe you have a couple dumbbells. You can use a sandbag or whatever you have, maybe some textbooks laying around the house, and you can get creative. I highly recommend that everyone that works out at home buy a set of resistance bands. You can get a lot done with resistance bands. I would say I had not the most successful, but during quarantine when I actually had dumbbells up to 90, but I was doing a program where you only need 30-pound dumbbells and resistance band and like a towel basically. And I had by far the most productive. I grew more muscle mass than I had in that 3-4 month period than I had ever before, which is crazy.
Nice. And that was up until you started doing your newer stuff, right?
Yeah, that was like my new transition to the newer stuff. And then I went back into the gym and had all those tools, same principles, same mindset. And now you have a lot more tools at your hand in your toolbox. So it's a lot easier to do it, but you can definitely get away with a lot at home.
Nice. So we start out with deciding what our goal is.
Mm-hmm.
Then how do we set up, how do we prioritize our workouts? So we decide what muscle parts we want to prioritize from there. How you actually begin to write this down, decide what kind of volume you're going to be doing, that mm-hmm. kind of stuff.
So obviously first you got to choose how many days a week you want to work out. And then I will literally write every muscle group that I want to hit. And I will write how many times a week I want to hit it. So, and there's also certain considerations to think like the chest, you might want to combine a press with a fly kind of motion, like a cable fly, because the press overloads the bottom portion of the exercise and the fly overloads the shortened. So you might include those together because they're not redundant. They're building upon each other. They're picking up the bench press is hard at the bottom, the stretch position. The fly is hard in the shortened position. So you're not fatiguing the muscle completely doing one of those. So combining both, you might look at together, but you might, how much time that takes too. So you can superset those things as well. But so, all right. So I'm writing down how many times I want to hit each muscle group. And then I just throw it on. Usually I use a Google sheet on each day. So if I'm hitting a muscle group multiple times in a week, I want to make sure there's at least one day between,
mm-hmm.
Ideally probably two. And if you have a rest day, I mean, obviously it depends on when your calendar is, but I really like having it in the middle. So I'll do two and two, 4 days a week. I've been doing that for over a year now, and I really like it. It's nice to not lift every day.
Mm-hmm.
And so then I'll just throw things down, and I won't really organize it yet. I just want to get everything on the calendar with as many times as I've hit it. So if I have forearms once a week or calves once a week and chest 2 or 3 times a week, I just want to see that all on the various days. And ideally, you're not hitting the same muscle group day after day. And then I'm going to organize it in terms of priority. So maybe I'll put calves first to get them out of the way. And then I'll go chest or back whenever I'm organizing there. And then biceps, triceps, fill in those accessories at the end. Then next day, keep going on. And then it's also really important. I really like to start with, it depends on the person, but I think starting with 2 sets is probably the go-to. You can focus on having good form and you can take it to failure. And it's not going to take a lot of time. And then as you get better at doing the exercises, you'll get better at form. It'll take you less time to set up. You'll know what you're doing more. And so then you can add more volume and use that as a form of progression. So you can progress over maybe a month, add a 3rd set in. And maybe you add more volume to the exercise you want to prioritize first, right? So the chest, you add a 3rd set in first. Then you add a 3rd set to forearms. And then you can go to 4 sets if you want. I like to change up my program every 6 to 8 weeks typically, but you can definitely get away with 2 to 3 months too.
So how do you decide whether or not you're doing low reps versus high reps on a given exercise?
So, well, rep range by itself is going to be largely determined by the stability of the exercise.
Okay. What does that mean?
So I can, so, okay. The best way to explain it, right, is it's really hard for me to recruit all of my quads when I'm doing a Bosu ball squat, right? So if I'm never going to do a Bosu ball squat, but the answer is like, I have to, there's a lot of stabilizer muscles that I have to recruit. So it makes it harder for you to recruit the target muscle because all that other stuff is going on. So a lunge is a regression. It's a obviously way more stable version than a Bosu ball squat. But if I try and do 6 reps on a lunge, it's going to be really hard because I have to balance that. Mm-hmm. If I try and do 6 reps on a hack squat or even a barbell squat, the ability to balance and stabilize is a lot less. I don't have to balance myself as much. So I can recruit those muscles much more easily and much more consistently. So rep range is largely going to be determined by load, but also like the load you can use and balancing that out literally with how stable you feel during the exercise. And also, I mean, it's worth noting that the more you lunge, probably going to get better at lunging. Mm-hmm. So you can load that up more. But so generally you want to be in the 6 to 12 rep range for muscle growth. There is definitely something too. So I do a lot of periodization. So I'll switch between really low reps, which is like, let's say 4 to 6, which is where you're really focusing on the skill of actually recruiting the muscle fibers. So you're really like basically the skill of lifting heavy weights. It's a lot more regarding your nervous system, your brain's ability to recruit the muscles than it is the actual muscle's ability to produce force. That doesn't necessarily help you build muscle directly, but it does increase your ability to control your muscles. So then when you go back to the hypertrophy work, the 6 to 12 rep range, then you're able to use heavier weights. You're able to produce more force and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like setting the stage for muscle growth.
Exactly. And yeah, it's because like exercises in themselves are a skill, right? So the better you can get it, probably every end is going to be like every aspect of it. Probably going to be make you better at the exercise, mm-hmm. just like any other sport. And then I'll also do some high rep. So those are always going to be pretty much as much rest as you can afford. 2 to 3 minutes is generally ideal. But obviously, if you could do 10 minutes between sets, there's really no downside to it, in my opinion. Obviously, I don't do that because no one wants to spend their whole day in the gym. Mm-hmm. And don't be the guy sitting in the squat rack taking 10 minutes between sets. But so then you have, there's two more stimulus that you can program for. There's local metabolic. So that's basically, you're trying to challenge how much glycogen or glucose stores are in your muscle cells. So basically trying to increase the amount of gas in your tank. And for those, your goal is to basically use as much glycogen, use as much energy as fast as possible, not allow your cell to recover. So you're going to do really, that's what I've been doing recently, really high rep, low weight. So I'm doing like 10 to 12 reps with 15 to 25 seconds to 30 seconds between each set, and then doing 6 sets, which is really nice because it only takes like 5 minutes in exercise, mm-hmm. versus 5 minutes for 2 sets.
Right.
And then you have systemic metabolic, which is basically like a circuit. So you're just trying to basically, instead of trying to train how much your muscle, your bicep can store in glycogen, trying to train how much your liver can hold in glycogen. So you're doing like supersets, let's say like deadlift and I don't know, like a lat dumbbell row. Mm-hmm. So you're just trying to challenge your whole body systemically, how much glycogen you can store in your liver. And that would be like something like circuits would work well with like that, like CrossFit classes or whatever, like Zumba, whatever those mm-hmm. things.
What's the difference between increasing the amount of glucose stores that you have and increasing your capacity to handle lactic acid?
Lactic acid buffering? That's great question. Those are probably very connected things, because I would assume the more glycogen you have, the better you're going to be able to use it, and the more your cells are probably going to adapt to be able to buffer more ATP, buffer more lactate, and all that stuff. But I think there are a number of mechanisms, and I highly recommend reaching out to N1 and following their stuff. I've taken their course or part of it. I have to finish the course, but they have a lot of interesting, and there are some decent amount of mechanisms, I think studies as well, that show that our ability to buffer lactic acid does increase as you train for it, as you, you know, do it. Ideally though, if you were trying to increase your lactic acid buffering though, you would probably do I would say longer duration, just do because like there's probably not going to be a ton of lactic acid accumulated in the short reps. So you'd probably want to do like really high reps, like muscle endurance kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So you're just training your body to really burn lactate and get it out of the cell.
How many exercises are you typically doing per workout session?
I think 4 to 6 is the sweet spot typically. I think 5 is probably where it's ideal. 4 is great too if you can afford that. It's just hard to get all of your exercise in before a week. 6 can get a little bit much, but if you're doing the things like calves, and again, it's going to depend a lot on the metabolic split. When I'm doing really high rep, low rest, it takes a lot less time than if I'm doing the mechanical tension where I'm taking 2 to 3 minutes between sets and doing sets of hack squats where I have to try not to cry between sets. So it's I think 5 is ideal. I end up programming myself more because I can't make decisions and I end up just throwing too much volume on because I can't eliminate things. What about you? What do you like to do?
Typically 5 is the sweet number that I've found. Mm-hmm. So like 2 main movements and then like 3 accessory movements after that.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of the sweet spot that I've found
over the years. I think that is pretty, I agree pretty much. I think you can get away with 6 sometimes. And I think 4 is nice if you can afford that. And you can get away with maybe if you're working out 5-6 days a week, but it's hard to do if you're working out 4.
Mm-hmm. So what would you say are the main differences if you're programming for a 4-day week, like 4 or 5 days mm-hmm. per week versus like 2 days a week?
So 2 days a week, I think you really have to focus on maintenance volume versus, let's say, like growth volume. How does Israel call it?
I'm not really sure.
It's all basically you're going to really specialize on, you're going to maintain most of your muscle mass. Like, so let's say you want to do, let's say you have 2 days a week, obviously, as you said, and you want to grow biceps and triceps. So you might hit those both days
mm-hmm.
and you're going to prioritize those. So you're going to either put them at the end of your workout and go really to failure or put them at the beginning of your workout and still go to failure. Mm-hmm. They're not the biggest muscle group, so you'll probably be fine either way. And the rest, you're pretty much going to, and I'm going to make a 2-day a week program in Hoops Fit that'll be out in the next couple of weeks. But the other muscle groups, you're going to pretty much just focus on maintaining. So you might do 1 or 2 sets, take them pretty close to failure, but they're not your priority at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And then every, let's say, 4 to 6 weeks, you're probably just going to shift. And now you might prioritize your glutes and quads
mm-hmm.
and keep the biceps and triceps on maintenance dose. In those 2-day a week splits, it is just going to be supersetting things. So it's like when you superset the pec fly with a dumbbell press, you can do those one after the other because you're much weaker in that pec fly, the shortened position, than the lengthened position. So it won't really take away from your ability to press.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be a huge time saver too, because as you only have 2 days a week, you want to get as much as you can in that time. So utilizing things like that, so that's like a mechanical drop set is what it would be technically called. And then just trying to basically get as much as you can in those 2 sessions a week. And then obviously just periodizing, like switching up which muscle groups you're trying to grow.
Mm-hmm. So you would say that your goals have to be a lot more narrow and honed in if you're doing just a couple days a week versus mm-hmm. like 4 days a week.
Yeah, I mean, I don't necessarily think a fat loss probably won't be changed as much. What I would just try and do on the other days that I'm not lifting is just get 20,000 steps in, just be active.
Mm-hmm. Or do jiu-jitsu.
That also works. and I mean, even for muscle gain, I mean, the issue is like if you're only lifting 2 days a week, you probably don't want to be in a surplus 7 days a week.
Yeah.
So I might try and do like a maintenance on most of the days, except maybe like during the week, like 4 days a week or 5 days a week, you do surplus with maybe a bigger surplus in lifting days and a slightly smaller surplus on the non-lifting days, and then do like a maintenance day 1 or 2 a week, or even maybe a deficit day.
Mm-hmm.
I think like the nutrition isn't going to change that much. And I mean, the same thing for recomp. If you wanted to recomp, I mean, doing a low dose probably wouldn't be the worst idea. Because you can do a big surplus in the days you lift and maybe a deficit in the weekends or something.
Mm-hmm.
No one wants to do a deficit on the weekends, but if you want to, you could. So, yeah, I think those are probably going to be the biggest pillars.
Mm-hmm. And, like, a two-day split is, like, definitely not for muscle growth, right? It's mainly just, like, a maintenance type of split.
I mean, depending on how like your lifting experience, like what do they call it? You're like a lifting aid or something. Mm-hmm. You could definitely get away with 2 days a week, especially if you have a good program mm-hmm. and you're taking the muscles through your full range of motion and you're going to failure on it. The issue is like, you can really only go to failure and you can, I don't know how to say this. You can really only go to failure a handful of times in an exercise, like in a workout. There's at some point, like it's going to significantly, if I go to failure in a pendulum squat and you come and lift with me and we take you to failure, you are probably not going to have anywhere close to optimal performance anywhere else in that lift. Mm-hmm. Honestly, probably once. So you probably have one time you go to failure. Luckily, you don't need to go to complete failure to stimulate those high threshold motor units. It's probably good to do every once in a while. Mm-hmm. But there's just almost only so much. A, you have like how much are you lifting for 3 hours that day? Like, can you recover 5 minutes between every set? And B, it's like how much work can you fit in that bucket in that mm-hmm. 2 day a week split? For the average person, 2 days a week is probably not going to be enough to just because I mean it's really hard to hit every muscle group in 2 days a week. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I would not recommend it. You can get away with it, and if that's all you've got, I mean, go for it. I mean, that's why we're doing 2 day a week minimalist split. Jaden's going to be on that mm-hmm. in between jiu-jitsu and like I mean a lot of other priorities you have. Some people want to do jiu-jitsu, and I do jiu-jitsu, and I also lift. I'm just a nut job. And I like skiing, all that stuff too. Some people don't want to lift. They just want to be in the gym 2 days a week. I mean, realistically, lifting. And honestly, I'm trying to get my mom to lift 2 days a week because there's nothing close to lifting for longevity. It is by far the best bang for your buck. What happens, like, I like this example. When astronauts go to space, they lose a significant amount of bone density because there's no gravity anymore. Mm-hmm. So their bones no longer need to be as strong. And then when they come back to Earth, they need it back. And it's really important that they gain it back. Lifting is basically challenging your bones in a lot of ways. Challenging your muscles too, so you don't get weak. And we know muscular atrophy is one of the things that happens when we age. And getting strong and maintaining that strength is probably the best thing to fighting that. Mm-hmm. But it's also increasing your bones' ability to, your bone density by just loading them. Mm-hmm. So, and I mean, the hormonal benefits, I think there's probably some testosterone boosting benefits, and having some sort of stress in your day is also very important too. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Yeah. They say that grip strength is one of like the main markers of longevity and like your mm-hmm. ability to live like a qualitative life as you age too.
Yeah. I think that makes a ton of sense. I don't think like training your grip strength for longevity is probably the most, I think it's a very correlative thing where it's like mm-hmm. someone that has good grip strength is also like, I mean, they even say like grip strength changes largely throughout the day. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just like a general sign of good health. Mm-hmm. But like, I don't think like, oh, if I get my grip strength up 15 pounds, can it give me 15 more years of my life?
Right. Yeah.
Which I think is funny.
Mm-hmm. So for people who don't know what like the training age is that you mentioned earlier, mm-hmm. can you kind of explain what that means?
Yeah. It's basically just like a beginner, intermediate, and advanced lifter. In lifting, unlike everything else in life, you want to be as close to a beginner as possible because you have the most room to grow, pretty much. Mm-hmm. And the interesting part, and that's the other cool part that I didn't really mention, if you're a beginner and you just want to start making some physique changes, your goal in bodybuilding should always be to have the minimum effective dose. Mm-hmm. Because, yes, you might be able to get more out of doing another set or two, but that leaves you with less room to progress over time. Mm-hmm. So if you can get away with growing muscle mass with 2 sets a week, adding that third set probably not going to result in a significant increase in more muscle mass. Mm-hmm. So it's about continually progressing the minimally effective dose so you can continue to make gains over time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like basically what that means is that the longer that you train, the more adapted that you become to resistance training. So your body is going to have less of a favorable reaction to the actual training that is being placed upon it. So you want to make sure, like they call it newbie gains, because whenever you begin lifting, you have the least amount of adaptation to resistance training, as you can pretty much.
Yeah. That was much better said. yeah. So, and when you're advanced, like, I mean, I don't like to consider myself advanced. I don't know, cause I don't think I'm that big, but, I'm probably an intermediate lifter. Like the harder it gets to make more muscle mass. So that's when you have to look at, like, even to that strategy we were talking about for the 2 day split, and Mike Isertel talks about it a lot. Like, that's when you, even if you're lifting 4, 5, 6 days a week, you still might have to prioritize quads and chest and everything else in the maintenance dose. So it gets more and more complicated. I don't think I'm at that point at all yet. But I mean, everyone has to prioritize stuff because you can't prioritize everything. That's a great quote. I think he says, like, you can't hit four sets of everything and go to failure in everything every day. It's just not possible.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Sweet. That's all the questions that I've really got.
Awesome. I think that's it. If you guys have any questions, feel free to hit me up in Umzu Fit or on the Facebook groups.
Yep.
Thanks for tuning in.
Yeah, have a good one. Peace.